From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you are listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Every week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about the folks who are killing the planet and the folks who are saving what's left. They have detailed information, too. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses, so please go get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write it all down on, because this isn't Couch Potato Radio, it's Activist Radio. And I urge you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sitter, locked down in that dragon at the road blockade. And remember, if you have information, announcements, or comments for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact information and addresses later on in the show. Uncle Dennis has had a little cold the last couple of days, so hopefully we can make it through the next hour without voice breaking down completely, but let's get started with announcements. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has extended the time for the public to comment on habitat criteria for the recovery of the grizzly bear population in the Yellowstone ecosystem, and you can do that until October 30th, 1999. And they need to hear from you about why you think it's great for grizzly bears to be around. Included in the habitat plan are specific habitat needs for areas impacted by roads, trails, development, and livestock grazing on public lands. And when completed, the habitat recovery criteria will be appended to the grizzly bear recovery plan, so your comments are needed. All I have is an email address, so get those emails submitted by electronic mail by October 30th to fw6_grizzly@fws.gov. Please include habitat criteria in the subject line of the message. That email address once again is fw6_grizzly@fws.gov. All right, some more announcements here. The National Forest Protection Convention, October 15th through 17th. This is being held in Carbondale, Illinois. If you'd like more information, contact Jeanette Russell at russell@wildrockies.org. That's the National Forest Protection Convention, October 15th through 17th in Carbondale, Illinois. Once again, that email address, russell@wildrockies.org. And October 22nd and 23rd is the Centennial Conference for the Southern Appalachians. The Southern Appalachian Forest Coalition is hosting the two-day conference in Asheville in Northern Carolina's Arboretum, followed by an evening at the Grove Park Inn. And so please contact the Southern Appalachian Forest Coalition. Their number 828-252-9223. That's 828-252-9223. October 22nd and 23rd, the Centennial Conference for the Southern Appalachians, and the Northern Rocky Mountain Law Conference, October 30th and 31st. Sounds like a wild and woolly time's going to be had there. American Wildlands will host a conference called Intersections, Water Quality, Water Quantity, and Native Species. And lots of stuff going on there. For registration information, contact Judy at 406-586-8175. That's 406-586-8175. Or mail to J. Brauer, J-B-R-A-W-E-R, at wildlands.org. And let's see, we've got some other stuff coming up here in October. Let's see, read all of those. That's all November stuff. Here it is, Seattle Rally for Ancient Forests, October 11th. Join us and 500 others at least to save the last of our ancient forests in Washington, protect Fossil Creek, and watch Mountain support the town of Randall and the tree sits. It's going to be at the Federal Building, 915 2nd Avenue in downtown Seattle. Again, Monday, October 11th at noon, a vigil and rally to send a message to Senator Patty Murray, March. And for more information, or if you'd like to help out, contact the Pacific Crest Biodiversity Project. Gosh, and it doesn't... anyway, get to downtown Seattle, 915 2nd Avenue at the Federal Building at noon on the 11th, okay? Don't have any contact information on that one. Okay. The October Rainforest Benefit Tour. Ruth Rosenheck sent me this nice email. She and John Seed are going to be traveling around. October 16th, from 10 to 4 p.m. in Oakland, California, at the Center for Earth Timeline of Light Workshop. For more information, 510-452-2427. And that evening in Oakland at 7 p.m., Cosmic Gifts and Rainforest Roadshow. Again, contact number is 510-452-2427. October 18th in Palo Alto, California, at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. The title of this talk is Deep Ecology and the Self. Contact M. Hutton, M-H-U-T-T-O-N, at TMN.com. And let's see, October 27th from 4 to 7 p.m. in Middleton, Connecticut. Timeline of Light Workshop, and the contact of person for that show is running_water@email.msn.com. Once again, that's running_water@email.msn.com. And there's some more coming up, but anyway, that's it for the Rainforest Roadshow. We'll give you more announcements on that stuff later. The Wildlife Society is sponsoring a conference on ecology and management of dead wood in the Western Forest, November 2nd through the 4th in Reno, Nevada. I'll give you more information here later on this, but for registration information, contact William at 510-465-4962. That's 510-465-4962. Or email to whull, W-H-U-L-L, at cgbd.org. That's whull at cgbd.org for the Deadwood Management Conference, November 2nd through 4th in Reno, Nevada. And for all you folks that are headed north for the WTO, here's an announcement. Corporate Watch editor Julie Light and syndicated columnist Norman Solomon were going to co-host World Trade Watch, a series of five daily radio programs from the historic WTO summit in Seattle, November 29th through December 3rd. And so get ready. And all that's going to be at www.corpwatch.org/corner/alert/wtw.html. Once again, check out this webpage, www.corpwatch.org/corner/alert/wtw.html. And they're going to have great stuff. The one-hour programs, much like Earth First Radio, they're going to have real audio. They're going to have a satellite uplink for public radio folks and an internet MPEG stuff. So looks like this World Trade stuff is going to be happening here right in the near future. Let's move right on into activist news. Monday, one day before the World Bank's annual meeting, an activist from the San Francisco-based Rainforest Action Network climbed seven stories up the side of the World Bank building and unfurled a giant banner urging Bank President James Wolfensohn to pull the plug on an oil project slated for Chad and Cameroon in Africa. The banner displayed a gigantic photograph of Wolfensohn over the message, "Tax dollars and corruption by murder and destruction. Stop the African oil pipeline." The African Rainforest Pipeline Project will slice through pristine forests and put millions of dollars into the pockets of two corrupt governments, the group said. Wolfensohn has stated repeatedly the World Bank should fight corruption, and this is his chance to live up to his words, said RAN Africa campaigner Eric Brownstein. Everyone knows it's hard for him to stay true to his ideals when oil giants like Exxon and Shell are turning up the heat, but right now the whole world is watching. James Wolfensohn alone has the power to stop the African rainforest pipeline. The rainforest pipeline project's proposed oil fields are in the heart of Chad's fertile food-producing region, where even an incidental spill could be devastating. Internal World Bank memos recently gave a RAN show that the World Bank intends to proceed with the pipeline project, even though officials acknowledge it may be catastrophic for the region. And in other activist news, at 5 this morning, a couple of days ago, a determined group of women began a blockade of logging roads leading to the contested Stoltman Wilderness in the Alajo Valley of British Columbia, about 120 miles north of Vancouver. The blockade is in retaliation for the September 15th attack, which you heard about from Uncle Dennis, on logging protesters and forest conservation researchers by loggers and trucks belonging to International Forest Products and other logging companies in the Alajo Valley. That assault sent 8 people to the hospital. Interfor President Duncan Davies has called for a cooling-off period at the anti-logging protest in the Alajo Valley, north of Squamish, for loggers, contractors, and blockaders. In no way do we condone violence or vandalism, said Davies. But the world's anger has not cooled. The recent attack against environmentalists at a peaceful protest camp in the Stoltman sent Soraya Mastusia to the hospital and left her traumatized by threats of rape, a signal that Interfor employees hold conservation issues and women's rights in little regard, the blockade organizer said. Bad news from BC. But they're fighting back. And in news about the Judy Berry civil rights lawsuit, a 3-judge panel in Oakland ruled that 3 Oakland police investigators, along with several FBI agents, are not entitled to qualified immunity and a liability exemption generally granted to law enforcement authorities in their routine handling of criminal investigations. In a 25-page opinion, the justices agreed that an appeal filed in April by a legal team representing Berry and her co-defendant Daryl Cherney raises a genuine issue of fact as to whether police investigators Michael Sims, Robert Chenault, and Michael Studdard conspired to assist the FBI in interfering with the activists' political activities during the 1990 Redwood Summer logging protest. The ruling by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals overturned a lower court ruling granting the law enforcement authorities the immunity. The judges said there's merit to the lawsuit's contentions that police investigators and FBI agents acted in concert to falsely portray Berry and Cherney as being responsible for the May 24, 1990 explosion in an Oakland neighborhood that blew up their car. Cherney was slightly injured, but Judy Berry was left permanently disabled and unfortunately has died since then. Neither Oakland police representatives nor Karen Rodriguez, deputy city attorney for Oakland, could be reached for comment on the ruling. Dennis Cunningham, Berry and Cherney's San Francisco lawyer, said the Friday's ruling could finally allow the Berry lawsuit to go forward to trial after 8 years of skirmishing. It's a major battle we needed to clear, and we did, said Cunningham. Unfortunately, Judy Berry died in March of 1997 from breast cancer. All right. And in other activist news, I'm reading from an article in the News Review. I believe this comes out of Oregon. This article was written by Derek Reiber. He starts out, call them misguided, rebellious, dedicated, or just plain crazy, whatever one's opinion may be, 2 young women are fast approaching a benchmark of protest never seen in Douglas County, Oregon. 100 days perched 120 feet above the ground in the branches of a Douglas fir tree, 100 days without setting foot on solid ground, and the 2 19-year-olds who call themselves River and Madrone plan to stay up in the tree they call Madre Loca, Spanish for crazy mama, through the coming season of cold rain and snow, if necessary. We're prepared for the winter. We'll stay up here as long as it takes, said River. Speaking on a cell phone, her youthful and enthusiastic voice faded in and out, sometimes garbled with static over the wireless connection. We're determined to save this forest, she said. The 2 protesters, who won't divulge much personal information besides the fact they are both originally from the Midwest, first climbed up into the tree on July 2nd, and they were discovered 10 days later by loggers working for a Riddle-based Herbert Lumber. The loggers had arrived to harvest the 32-acre stand of 200-year-old trees on the Bureau of Land Management property near Glide. Since then, the harvest has been postponed indefinitely, and we thank those two young ladies for their great action. And in other action news, the Anti-Genetic Engineering Group, Reclaim the Seeds, conducted its fifth action against genetically engineered crops at the University of California campus. A couple of days ago, according to an anonymous communique released today, the group destroyed 5 rows of transgenic melons, 16 rows of transgenic walnut trees, 60 rows of pesticide-ridden tomatoes, as well as removed 2 pieces of research equipment at 2 UC Davis genetic engineering facilities. The incident, which targeted the Department of Plant Pathology and the Center of Engineering Plants and Resistance Against Pathogens, was the 6th NIGE action this month by 2 different groups, following 3 previous events in California and 2 in Minnesota, not to mention events in Great Britain, Uncle Dennis told you about last week. University of California, Davis has become one of the largest transgenic research programs in the world, said conservative organic farmer Johanna Appleseed. From tomatoes and trees to primates and mice, UC provides the biotech industry with lucrative data at public expense. Reclaim the Seeds says, enough is enough, and our actions speak louder than words. Nonviolent direct action is a most powerful force. Resistance to genetic engineering is as transnational as capital. The action by Reclaim the Seeds is part of a growing worldwide rejection of genetically engineered crops and of the handful of transnational corporations like Monsanto, Novartis, and DuPont, which are attempting to manipulate the future of the world's agriculture and food supply in order to bolster their own profits. All right. And moving into other action news, a International Action Day to transform the home improvement industry. Grassroots pressure urgently needed, help save old growth forests on October 26th. Home Depot has recently committed to phasing out wood from endangered areas. Lowe's Companies has made public statements and is the process of signing a corporate letter of intent to phase out old growth woods. We now have an historic opportunity to demand the entire retail wood industry goes old growth free. Home Depot claims to sell 10% of the world's wood products, and they control 40% of the U.S. home improvement industry. If we can get the rest of the industry to meet or beat Home Depot's plan of action, then we have an unprecedented chance to force more than 20% of the world's timber sales to be old growth free. All right, once again, that's urgent action. The Help Save Old Growth Forests, October 26th. And let's see here. Let me see if they have more information. Okay, here's the contact information. Jennifer Krill, and her email address is jkrill, J-K-R-I-L-L, at rand.org. Patrick Rainsborough at rags@rand.org, or Aaron Jackson, ajackson, at rand.org, or call any or all of us at RAN, area code 415-398-4404. That's Rainforest Action Network, 415-398-4404. And together we can get old growth forests off the shelves of the home improvement industry forever. Let's hope. Let's hope. Let's hope. Let's hope. And in science news, a new laser instrument aboard a NASA research plane will map several U.S. forests this month in order to monitor the health of the forest. The new instrument, called the Laser Vegetation Imaging Sensor, uses a sensor technology referred to as LIDAR for light detecting and ranging, similar to radar, but using lasers, that has been used to map the surface of Mars and coastal erosion. The technology has been modified to map the ground beneath the dense forests and measure the structure and density of those forests. Scientists will use this information to study global climate change and to monitor forest ecosystems around the world. The instrument contains 5 lasers that send pulses of energy to the Earth's surface. Photons from the lasers bounce off leaves, branches, and the earth and ground and reflect back. By analyzing these return signals, scientists have a direct measurement of the height of the forest leaf-covered canopy, the ground below, and everything in between, including forest activists, I presume. Don't look up! Beginning in mid-September, the research plane will map eastern U.S. forests in Maryland, North Carolina, and New Hampshire, and then it will travel west to map California's Sequoia National Forest. According to the University of Maryland, this technology was developed at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center and will be launched into space next year aboard the NASA University of Maryland Vegetation Canopy LIDAR spacecraft. Sounds pretty good to me. The more you know, information is friendly. Remember that. The more you know, the more you can find out about. Biologists in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will host public meetings in five Colorado counties that are home to the threatened Preble's Meadow Jumping Mouse to discuss creating habitat conservation plans. Those plans are intended to protect the mice and their habitat while allowing economic expansion and growth in mouse habitat along the Front Range of the Colorado Rocky Mountains. The need for habitat conservation plans arises out of a simple fact: endangered and threatened species live and roam wherever they find suitable habitat without regard to who owns it. When the land was planned for something else, that's when the need for innovating solutions emerges, says Ralph Morgenweck, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Mountain Prairie Region Director. Habitat conservation planning eliminates communities having to choose between economic development and wildlife conservation. The agency plans to assess the environmental effects of implementing the proposed HCPs for each county. The meetings will allow the public to comment, offer information on activities that may be affected when the mouse is present, present ideas to conserve the Preble's Meadow Jumping Mouse while allowing land use activities to continue, and detail the process counties undertake to develop their HCPs. The first meeting will be held 9 a.m. Wednesday in Castle Rock, Douglas County. I guess that was last Wednesday. Let's see here. In the future, is in Jefferson County, October 5th in Kiowa, Elbert County. October 13th at 6 p.m. in Colorado Springs, El Paso County. October 18th at 6 p.m. in Boulder, Boulder County. If you want more information about these hearings, contact the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Their number is 303-275-2370. That's U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Colorado, 303-275-2370. And news from West Virginia. Four men were arrested and convicted in West Virginia last week for catching threatened salamanders and other species and removing them from the state. The State Division of Natural Resources prosecuted the men after they were found in possession of two threatened cheat mountain salamanders, five other lizards or salamanders, and a snake. The four men were employees of Appalachian Technical Services and were conducting a study of endangered Indiana bats in West Virginia for the U.S. Forest Service Monongahela National Forest. The company had a permit to capture, identify, and photograph and release the bats, but no permit covering the cheat mountain salamanders or other wildlife species. An informant saw the group with the salamanders and contacted the Department of Natural Resources. An investigation led to Kentucky, where live cheat mountain salamanders and other amphibians and reptiles were found. One salamander was being held in a refrigerator. All the animals were returned to the cheat mountain area and released. The four men pleaded no contest to DNR charges of illegal possession of wildlife in violation of a collecting permit. Mark Gumbert, James Kaiser, Paul Roger Moosman were each fined $734, and Joseph Settles, 26, was fined $367. DNR Captain Kenneth Painter said the animals do not have a known commercial value and appear to have been taken for the group's private collections. And in other news from Seattle, Washington today, a federal district court held that 24 timber sales cannot go forward until the federal government assures that they will not harm salmon listed under the Endangered Species Act and that they will comply with the rules established under the President's Northwest Forest Plan. The ruling came in a lawsuit brought by Earth Justice Legal Defense Fund on behalf of several fishing and environmental organizations. This ruling may finally force the federal government to stop logging salmon habitat until it lives up to its legal duty to protect threatened and endangered salmon, said Doug Hyken of Plaintiff Oregon Natural Resources Council. And timber harvest will be allowed to resume on the shingle mill timber sale in the Allegheny National Forest following a four-month moratorium prompted by the presence of endangered bats. On May 15th, all commercial timber harvest projects were halted on the Allegheny National Forest. A citizen lawsuit brought by two forest protection groups helped halt the logging. Shingle mill timber sale is the first project to be allowed to resume timber harvest. Pennsylvania Congressman John Peterson, a Republican, worked with the U.S. Forest Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on a plan to resume logging while protecting endangered species, including the bats, the small world pagonia, the bald eagle, the clamshell, and the northern riffle shell mussels. All right. We're going to take a little musical break right here and give Uncle Dennis's throat a rest. So while we do that, why don't we listen to some Daryl Cherney. And Earth First Radio will be right back after this break.